following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255-458-TALK, and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. Lovely day in Fairbanks, 28 degrees downtown. It's nice and warm, and I've actually been enjoying my long hikes. And here at the KFAR Broadcasting Station, Melissa Burnett is expertly running the board, and she's keeping the Shooter's Corner archives up to date for us. So if you miss a program, it will be accessible in the archives within a day or two. Thank you, Melissa. What is on our agenda today? Sliders. I will keep you in suspense. Sliders. And today's holiday is Near Miss Day. I have something to say about asteroids and bullets. And as promised, I will talk about the Civil War mini ball and why it was so destructive. If I have time, I have a comment about a story in the NRA magazine's Armed Citizen column that really made me think, and I'll share that with you. I've got some announcements. Checks next. Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit classes are coming up March 25 and 26th. That's this weekend, and April 22nd and 23rd. Sign up at mylegalheat.com. Chuck teaches that class once a month. Or you can visit Chuck's website, c4traininggroup.com, and sign up through the link at his website. Chuck's next Red Dot Transition course is Saturday, April 29. And Chuck, if you are listening, thank you for being on Shooter's Corner last week and providing a rundown and learning points from your Red Dot Transition class. I've got more positive comments about your hour here last week than for any other program we've done. Chuck's next Defensive Handgun for the Armed Citizen class is April 15 and 16. Students participate in force-on-force scenarios, including a grand finale involving all of the students. And afterward, Chuck leads debriefing discussions on what is expected and possible courses of action. Defensive Shotgun is coming up June 10 and 11, and Defensive Rifle is July 22nd and 23rd. And the final Defensive Handgun Level 2 class for those who have taken Defensive Handgun Level 1 or the Defensive Handgun for the Armed Citizen class will be August 12th and 13th. If you have any questions at all, call Chuck at 844-966-4079 or go to his website, c4traininggroup.com. And I want to remind you about Glenn Miller's NRA Metallic Cartridge Reloading class. The June 17 class is now open for registration on the AIMCOM website. Glenn's April 29 class that's coming up, that class is currently full. Now, Glenn's NRA metallic cartridge reloading classes fill up quickly. They fill up very quickly. If you want to take this class, sign up for the June 17 class now. You can go direct to the AIMCOM website or call Glenn Miller at 907-347-1396 for more information. Or if you want to be on a wait list for the April 29 class, just in case there's a last minute opening. I highly recommend, as you know, Glenn's reloading classes. I took it on October 29 last year, and you can find my Shooter's Corner review of Glenn's class in the archives, in the archive date December 8th, 2022. And after the June class, there won't be any more classes until next October. Glenn only teaches this four times a year. And folks, with an upcoming election in 2024, now is the time to learn how to reload and start accumulating supplies. Don't wait for the next ammunition shortage. Husbands, get your wives started reloading, and parents and grandparents, get your youth age 16 and up started with a solid foundation. Again, Glenn's phone number is 907-347-1396. And yes, Glenn Miller, when he settles back in town from his travels, he will be back on Shooter's Corner.
He better be.
Yeah, we miss him.
we miss you, Glenn.
Yeah, there's some new loading equipment out there he needs to tell everyone about. Okay. The past few weeks, there haven't been many holidays I could relate to firearms. Today, I got lucky. Today is Near Miss Day. Now, taking information from the write-up on Near Miss Day from checkaday.com, Near Miss Day commemorates the time when the 4581 Asclepius, I practice that, Asclepius asteroid had a close call with hitting Earth, passing by about 425,000 miles away. This may seem like a long distance, but in space distance, it is very close, and it missed striking Earth by 6 hours. It was closest to Earth between March 22nd and 23rd, 1989. The asteroid, named after the Greek god of medicine, is about 300 meters wide and would have released energy comparable to a 600 megaton bomb, larger than any nuclear bomb ever created if it would have hit Earth. It would have left a crater many miles in diameter and would have been capable of wiping out a large city. And by the way, the symbol with the snake intertwined on the rod is the rod of Asclepius, the medical symbol. Now, and I don't know why they named the asteroid after that. I'm pretty sure we have all had a near miss ourselves. Now, it might be a near miss on a bullseye target or a near miss on an animal while hunting. For those of us using our firearms for self-protection, a near miss can be a disaster, both for a possible recipient of our near miss and legally and emotionally for ourselves. A near miss can be our own personal 600 megaton bomb. If we have to defend ourselves with our firearm, we must have the skill and concentration to put that shot where we intend for it to go. We cannot afford to have a near miss. The bullet from a near miss could hit another person, a bystander. A near miss leaves us vulnerable. The assailant is still coming at us. The bear is still charging us. Our job as safe firearms owners, firearms handlers, firearms users is to not have near misses. Now, perfection is impossible because we're human. Now, some of us, due to age or musculature or ability to concentrate, we may have near misses of the bullseye on a paper target. But I want to talk about defensive shooting and not paper targets. I want to pull a few thoughts from Chuck Interreden's discussion last week here on Shooter's Corner that will help us avoid near misses in defensive shooting. Before I start, learn your fundamentals of shooting. In the next month, I will be going over some training ideas that will help us cement our fundamentals and improve them. Improving our fundamentals starts in our brains. Defensive shooting and hunting in many situations is also highly affected by the physiological reactions in our bodies. But how can gear and equipment help us? We need the right gun for us personally. It has to fit us correctly. We have to be able to operate all the features on that gun, if it has a safety or a decocker. And getting back to Chuck Interreden's discussion last week, we might want red dots to work around the negative issues associated with front sight focusing. Red dots help with accuracy for everyone, but especially for those with aging eyes. They might mitigate negative effects of how our eyes focus, brought on by those physiological reactions to stress. And we talked about these reactions when I reviewed Aaron Cowan's white paper. And if you want to go back in the archives to listen to those programs, it was January 19, January 26, and February 2nd of this year. So those are in the archives. We humans stay target-focused using a red dot system. By staying target-focused, we will likely get our hits on the target, one or more assailants, if we are defending ourselves. Red dots help us avoid that near miss. And I briefly mentioned the term defensive accuracy last week when Chuck and I were talking. And today I want to tell you to analyze and know your personal range of defensive accuracy. What can you do with your gun? You need to know that. You need to know your capability. Other instructors may have their own take on this, but mine is that defensive accuracy is hits that fall within an 8.5 by 11 inch sheet of paper held chest height. In defensive shooting, we recommend 2 consecutive shots and then reassess whether more shots are needed to stop the threat. Your shots can be highly effective in stopping the threat if they fall on that 8.5 by 11 inch imaginary paper space that's chest high. And we're going to go to our break. I'm enjoying this, so the break came really quickly. So stick around, and we'll talk again around the corner.
Out in Arizona where the bad men are, the only thing to guide you is an evening star. The roughest, toughest man by far was Ragtime Cowboy Joe. He got his name from singing to the cows and sheep. Every night they say he's...
When you love being outside in Alaska, wintertime is just another trail to more sporting opportunities. Gear up with Frontier Outfitters, no matter what it is. Small game hunting, predator calling, ice fishing, and more. You'll find what you're looking for. Guns, ammunition, optics, GPS, traps, snares, and the right clothes. Winter camping necessities as well, and a variety of tents and sleeping bags. Prepare for success. Visit Frontier Outfitters. It's the best start to your next outdoor adventure. For your Alaskan lifestyle, Frontier Outfitters.
Hey, Fairbanks. It's still dark as a welder's elbow at night, and as the snow gets deeper, the moose start using the roads for trails. Moose lights save lives, and to help keep your family safe, Auto Trim Design is offering 15% off all Vision X LED moose lights when we professionally install them for you. So keep your family safe, save some bucks, and see us for your moose lights today at Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
As we always say, we will be here when the other guys are gone.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies today with highs around 31. Winds out of the west 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of snow tonight, lows level off around 9 above. Overcast. Snow likely tomorrow, highs level off around 23. Cloudy. A dusting of snow tomorrow. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and Melissa Burnett, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK. What is on your mind about firearms today? Now, with iron sights, the further away you are from your intended target, it is likely the spread of your shots in that space, in that 8.5 by 11 piece of paper space, is going to be wider. The faster you shoot, it's likely the spread will also be wider. With iron sights, if you practice properly, you will find your shots will fall on that 8.5 by 11 inch piece of paper in a somewhat cross-shaped pattern, depending where your front sight is within your rear sight blades. More concentrated in the middle of the paper at near distances and spread more toward the outer edges of that space the further you are away from the target and the faster you're shooting. And this is because with defensive shooting, you are likely shooting quickly. You do not have time to perfectly align your front sight with your rear sight. Get that front sight anywhere within the rear sight notches, a little high or a little low, slightly to the left, slightly to the right. As long as that front sight, off perfect as it may be, is within the rear sight notch, your shot should fall in that defensive shooting range, the 8.5 by 11 inch piece of paper. If they do not, it could be because your rear sight notch is too wide for your front sight blade, or you need to slow down and work on your fundamentals. Now, anything off that paper is an asteroid, right? It's a dangerous near miss. That can get you in trouble. But a red dot system helps us tighten up those groups. There are no rear sight blades to align with, or you don't have your front sight wobbling around within those blades. It is simply put the red dot on the target and shoot. There is no dealing with the effects brought by changes in our eyes focusing caused by the physiological stress. There's no forcing our eyes to focus between 3 different focal planes. The assailant as the target, and then the rear sight, and then the front sight, and then back to our assailant, and then off the assailant back to the front sight to take the shot. And these mental and physical sight mechanics, especially under stress, can cause us to have near misses. So maybe you want to try a red dot system. Practice your defensive shooting, and whether you use a red dot or iron sights, make sure you attain defensive accuracy. Make sure you know what you can do with your own gun. Now let's move on to sliders. I bet you think a slider is something you eat at White Castle, and that's a reasonable assumption. White Castle hamburger chains are part of our culture. They've been around since 1921. They are said to be the world's first fast food hamburger chain. And back in 1921, a White Castle hamburger, which is a small square affair, was referred to as a slider. They cost 5 cents up until 1921, and when the price was raised to 10 cents, and it remained at 10 cents until 1949. Now, back in the 1940s, if you could afford a newspaper, you would find White Castle coupons advertising 5 sliders for 10 cents, takeout only. If those of you who love White Castle sliders are hungry for one here in Fairbanks, frozen Fairbanks, you might find a package of frozen sliders at the grocery store here. I don't know if any grocery stores sell them here, but they do. White Castle does make the frozen sliders. And I bet we have some listeners who love White Castle sliders. But the all-American success story about the good White Castle sliders are not the sliders I want to talk about. I want to talk about the bad sliders, those bad sliders. Bad sliders commit slider crimes. And here's a quote from Officer Steve Avery from the Atlanta Police Department. Quote, I want to talk with you today about a crime which is unfortunately on the rise in our city and throughout the region. These crimes have been dubbed slider crimes. They happen when a thief slides into your vehicle to steal the vehicle itself or steal the valuables inside it. These crimes often happen at gas stations and convenience store parking lots where people are focused on their day-to-day errands. Slider crimes can happen in the blink of an eye. But there are steps you can take to reduce your chances of becoming a victim. Always lock your car and turn it off when you step outside for any reason or any length of time at all. That means if you are pumping gas, putting air in your tires, or dropping into a convenience store for a pack of gum, lock your car. If you have a vehicle with keyless entry or a push-button start, be aware that your key fob allows any criminal to unlock your doors and start your car. Never leave your key fob inside of your vehicle and know the distance your key fob is operable from your car so you can keep a close eye on it. Always be mindful of your surroundings. Watch out for suspicious individuals lurking nearby for no apparent reason. Hang up your phone and pay attention to the task at hand. Criminals love to prey on people who are distracted. Finally, never try to confront a slider suspect. We find some of them are armed and they are willing to use violence to get away. Instead, if you are able, get a good description of the suspect and call the police immediately, unquote. Always lock your car. Folks, keep your billfold and your cell phone with you. A gas station in St. Louis was hit by sliders 3 times in a few days. And I have a quote from one of the carjacking victims in that string of slider crimes. The entire incident was caught on camera. And as I watched the video, it took only a second or two for the slider to enter her, for the bad guy slider to enter this lady's car and drive it away. So this is the young lady speaking, quote, the thought of locking my car to pump gas when I'm not leaving my car never entered my mind, unquote. I mean, you're right there pumping gas into your car, right? You're right there with your car. On the video, which was from a gas station security camera, you can see the lady putting her charge card into the pump machine. Quote, as soon as I put my nozzle into my gas tank, I heard my engine start. I walked around to my car to get in it, and it took off, unquote. And that was the moment the slider was waiting for so he could enter her car. So as the lady had to focus her attention, her eyes, on sliding her charge card into the pump machine. By the time she moved the nozzle to her gas tank, in that few seconds while she was turned the other way, putting that charge card into the machine, the slider had already entered her car and started it. While watching the crime from the security camera, I could see that two men in a car, they pulled up close to the lady's car the first time, and then they did a drive around. So they were scoping things out. When they saw she was completely unaware, they probably noticed that she didn't have a purse on her, preoccupied with her task, the bad guys pulled around again the second time, very close to the lady's car. And the slider thief on the passenger side of the criminal's car got out quickly and jumped into the lady's car. And she had left her purse with everything in it, including her keys, in the car. All the slider had to do was start the car and quickly drive away with her car as his accomplice in the criminal car drove it away. And now they're gone. And now the poor lady is standing there, no car, no purse, no cell phone, nothing, just standing there in disbelief. She said, quote, "It was so chaotic, it all happened so fast, the officer told me 28 seconds the whole thing took." Unquote. The moderator on the video says it wasn't just the car being stolen that made this a nightmare for the young lady. And here's another quote from the victim, quote, "My purse was in the car, my wallet, my passport, my phone, my everything," unquote. So Chuck and Rita talked about gas station personal safety issues on Shooter's Corner. Look in the archives under June 30th, 2022. Chuck's topic was Fuel Stops, the Great Equalizer. I've talked a few times over the past couple years about being careful at gas stations while getting gas or going inside to pay. I've talked about being in parking lots, at grocery store parking lots. Sliders are especially bad for the ladies. Now, men carry important identification and cards in their billfolds, which are usually in their pockets. And men are in the habit of exiting their vehicles with their car key fobs in hand and then immediately putting them in their pockets. And women are not. If we have key fobs, our cars will start when the fob is within close distance to the starter, right? Well, where is our key fob? It's in our purse. Where do most women leave their purses when they pump gas? In their car. Now, even if you lock your car and put your key fob in your pocket, it's possible you're standing close enough to your car when pumping gas that one of your car doors was open. I think I tested mine, and it was about 2.5, maybe 3 feet, between 2.5 and 3 feet, that my locked door will open if that key fob is in my pocket. I don't know. I didn't have anyone need to start the car, so I don't know if it was start. But that's not very far away. Somebody could have just got in my car while I was pumping gas and stolen my purse. If your car may not start, but the slider can certainly grab your purse, right? It's best to have your purse with an over-the-shoulder crossbody strap on it. That's what I have. So your purse is with you on your body, cross over, so they can't just pull it off your arm, but both of your hands are free when you wear it that way. From what I've watched and read, sliders are not happening particularly at remote gas stations or at gas stations during times when many people are not around. They're happening at busy stations where you're surrounded by many people and many moving vehicles. And that way you are less apt to notice anything out of the ordinary or think someone is walking close to you for a specific purpose or driving by your vehicle a couple of times and scoping you out. You're not going to take it personally because there's all this traffic moving. You might think they're just circling until they find an unoccupied path. So another reminder from me, make sure you have a security code access to your cell phone. So if it's stolen, no one can access your contacts. And I suspect most of us do these days, but if not, you're forewarned. If you follow the safety protocols at gas stations and convenience stores, your car, your billfold will be safe and ready for what? For a trip to White Castle for the good kind of sliders. I just had to do that. Okay, we have a few minutes left before our half hour break, so I'm going to move into the mini ball discussions. When I finished up the book review on Jack Hinson's One Man War, Civil War Sniper, I said I would talk about the mini ball. It's a deadly ammunition when shot from a rifle musket. The mini ball is a hollow-based bullet designed by Claude Etienne. Minier. I had to practice that one, too. I got an asteroid and a French name. Not good at the languages. Etienne, Claude Etienne Minier. He was a French inventor who also invented the mini balls. Now, some people might say it's the Minier ball, but we Americans and everything I've listened to call it the mini ball, and that's what I'm going to do because it's easier for me. So the mini rifle and the mini ball go back to 1847. The British used it against the Russians in the Crimean War. Our military adopted the mini ball and the rifled musket in 1855, and that was 6 years before the start of our American Civil War in 1861. The Federal Army had them, not so much the Confederate, but they had them too. Even though Claude Mr. Minet developed the bullet and process, a few other Europeans improved upon it. But it was an American who enhanced its use for our Civil War. And I'll talk about that in a minute. In the Civil War, both the American Springfield model 1861 and the British pattern 1853 Enfield rifled muskets were the most commonly used with the mini ball. Just a little bit about the rifled musket first. As most of you know, rifling the spiral grooves inside the gun barrel create a stabilizing spin as the projectile passes through. And that stabilizing spin, imparted from the rifling, increases the stability and the accuracy of the bullet. And in addition, the mini ball ammunition used in these guns was quicker to load than the older style smooth bore muskets. Before the mini balls, iron or lead balls had to be rammed down a rifle barrel with force. Gunpowder residue would foul the rifle bore, the bore, and after a small number of shots, and then it would have to be cleaned before more shots could be taken. And clearly, this was a problem on the battlefield. The mini ball fit looser into the rifling, and it could be dropped in without being rammed. And we're going to go to our half-hour break, and we'll talk more right around the corner.
For your Alaska News Minute.
The Alaska House of Representatives recently passed a resolution to protect the state's right to manage wildlife populations. KTVF Channel 11 reports the resolution declares the National Park Services is overstepping its boundary and putting Alaska's rights at risk by wanting to change hunting and trapping regulations in national wildlife preserves. NPS seeks to prohibit and restrict certain non-subsistence hunting and trapping methods and classify them as predatory game management or non-hunting methods. Changing the classifications would allow the NPS to proclaim those practices as unauthorized in national wildlife preserves. The Alaska House Bill HUR 10 disapproves the proposed bill revision. The House believes these actions violate the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, ANILCA, because it takes away the state's right to manage wildlife populations. Representative Mike Kronk stated in part, limiting the state's ability to manage its wildlife population and ensure food security, particularly for rural Alaskans, is very concerning. The resolution passed on Monday.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
When you know the person who works on your car or truck, that's worth something. It gives a level of confidence that's hard to come by. That's Rogers Auto Repair. Family-owned and operated, Rogers is your complete automotive repair shop. Tune-ups, winterizing, even engine and transmission rebuilds are all done right in their shop on Dale Road near the airport. So call the folks with experience and a sound reputation. Call Rogers Auto Repair. You'll be their next satisfied customer. Call 479-6665. Rogers Auto Repair.
We don't always get to choose the road we travel, but when we're on that road, we go forward. Through the weather, the turns, all the challenges that can slow us down. Arctic RV encourages you to keep at it. Spring is coming and the road conditions are improving. Arctic RV is closed for winter, but they reopen Monday, April 3rd. We'll see you soon. Travel, explore, camp, get out and play in Alaska, and do it in comfort. Arctic RV, rough it in style.
Hey, Fairbanks, spring is in the air and summer is right around the corner. Throw some shade on your ride before the midnight sun gets here with Window Tint to keep you cool. With the snow and ice melting, the gravel will soon be exposed. Protect your vehicle from rock chips with paint protection film and ClearPlex windshield protection film. Call us today to have your tint or protection film professionally installed by Auto Trim Design. 907-456-8400. And like we always say, we will be here when the other guys are gone.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and Melissa Burnett at the controls, KFAR Radios. Please call in at 458-8255, 458-TALK. What is on your mind about anything that has to do with firearms today? Now, this next thing I had to read up a bit on how that smaller soft lead mini bullet expanded into the rifling, and that is called obturation. And the word obturation is used to mean a closing up of an opening. And here's a quote from Wikipedia. A bullet or pellet made of soft material and often with a concave base will flare under the heat and pressure of firing, filling the bore and engaging the barrel's rifling. The mechanism by which an undersized soft metal projectile enlarges to fill the barrel is, for hollow base bullets, expansion from gas pressure within the base cavity, unquote. In other words, the bullet expands under pressure to fit the bore of the firearm. And another example would be when we fire rounds through our pistols, it's obturation that expands the cases to seal the chamber. Obturation is why the hollow or concave based mini balls were narrow enough to slide down the barrel of a rifled long gun expanded their base in the rifled bore during the firing process. Now, that expansion meant they took advantage of the rifling and exited the muzzle with more stability. So let me talk about who was responsible for the effectiveness of the mini ball during our Civil War. And I'm taking information from Wikipedia, but I read a number of articles, and this is the same story in all of them. Quote, Captain James H. Burton, an armorer at Harper's Ferry Armory, developed a major improvement on mini's design when he added a deep conical cavity at the base of the ball, which more efficiently filled up with gas and expanded the bullet's skirt upon firing. A higher percentage of the explosive force went toward forward projectile motion, and lesser percentage went toward fitting into the rifling. Burton's modified mini ball had decreased mass and increased speed, resulting in increased energy at a better range, as well as a cheaper bullet. Burton's version of the ball weighed 1.14 ounces, unquote. And now we have a bullet with both more speed and more accuracy. What James Burton gave us was a 58 caliber lead projectile that would be cheaply mass produced. And as I said, it was in 1855, 6 years before the Civil War, that Secretary of War Jefferson Davis adopted both the rifled musket and Burton's improved mini ball for the United States Army. The mini balls used during the Civil War created terrible wounds. And this next information is taken from an article in IMSS, and IMSS stands for International Museum of Surgical Science. The article is titled, A Note from the Library, A Horrible Laceration, The Impact of the Mini Ball in the American Civil War. It's dated April 24th, 2020. And it's by Kelly Christian. Quote, the American Civil War was notoriously brutal and saw the deaths of over 620,000 people. In addition to battlefield injuries, the wounded would then be prone to disease as germs spread across the field hospitals. It's estimated that for every three men that died from battlefield wounds, five died from disease, which included the likes of gangrene, smallpox, and malaria. Field hospitals were frequently understaffed and lacked supplies, and despite this, field surgeons performed over 60,000 surgeries. It's estimated that nearly 45,000 of those surgeries were amputations. Amputations were needed because of the vast number of bullet wounds that struck or impacted limbs. Each wound was different based on a variety of factors such as proximity to the shooter, bodily movement, type of gun and ammunition, and atmosphere. The design of the rifle and the ammunition greatly contributed to the type and size of injury sustained. Smoothbore firearms often shot solid spherical ammunition that could certainly cause damage on the limbs of an adversary, but its dense material and small size sent bullets in and out of the limbs. The injury was obvious, but the spherical bullet could cleanly pass through the body, leaving an exit wound that was nearly the same as its entry. It could break a bone or damage soft tissue. And this injury, though painful and equally prone to infection, could be managed. The more innovative mini ball, however, was different. The ball was not round, but had rather a conical shape with rings around the bottom. And it was also made of lead, a softer material than the iron that many other types of ammunition were made from, unquote. So in 1879, the chair of surgery at New York Medical College, a William Todd Helmuth, wrote a book titled A System of Surgery. And Dr. Helmuth lived from 1833 to 1902. So it's quite possible he treated some of the mini ball wounds. The article provides this quote from his book. Quote, "The effect of the powder when firing is to expand the thin portion of lead around the recess at the base of the ball, making it fit tightly the grooves of the rifle. With these advantages, the missile may be projected to immense distances with unerring precision, and the effects are truly terrible. Bones are ground to almost powder, muscles, ligaments, and tendons are torn away, and the parts otherwise so mutilated that loss of life, certainly of limb, is almost an inevitable consequence," unquote. So if you Google that article, A Note from the Library, A Horrible Laceration, The Impact of the Mini Ball in the American Civil War, dated April 24, 2020, published by Kelly Christian, you will find a copy of a page of Dr. Helmuth's book. The page in his book is page 205, which is copied in that article, and it has the heading Gunshot Wounds. And on the page shown in the article, you can see a diagram of eight bullets. In the first group are general bullet shapes that were used in those days, and the article calls them different missiles of various guns. The second group are the round and conical bullets. And since this book was published in 1879, the description reads they are round and conical bullets now much used in the Army of the United States. So those were what were being used in that day. And pictured in the first group is a Whitworth bullet, a ball for a needle gun, a Wesson slug, and a large ball for a Spencer breech loader. In the second group is what you really want to look at. They show four. The first is a United States round musket ball, 69 caliber, 387 grains. Second is a Springfield rifle musket ball, caliber 58, weigh 500 grains. Third is an Enfield rifled musket ball, 450 grains. Fourth is an Austrian rifle ball, weight 460 grains. And those last balls that they call rifle ball in the illustration, those are mini balls. They interchangeably call them rifle ball or mini ball. So that's where you can see what these look like, the three different kinds that our Army was using. So slight differences between the last three mini balls, which the book calls interchangeably, like I said, rifled musket balls. So you may see it referred to as that. Now, getting back to the terrible damage that these mini balls did during the Civil War and their overall effect in depleting the Confederate troops, I'll take information from another article I found in the New York Times archives titled Opinionator, The Bullet That Changed History. The article notes that in the history of armed conflicts, though getting wounded is never a good thing, getting wounded in the Civil War was particularly deadly. Quote, "Those 4 years were a brief period when recent developments in arms and ammunition made battlefields far more lethal than they had been a decade before. While discoveries in medicine, which could have partially counterbalanced that awful effect of the new ordinances, were still a handful of years in the future," unquote. Years later, when historians studied why there were so many casualties in the Civil War, the overall conclusion was the introduction of the rifle musket. Quote, "And not without reason, the rifle musket combined the best features of the smoothbore musket and the Kentucky flintlock rifle. It could be loaded quickly and easily. An experienced soldier could load and fire up to four rounds a minute, while its long grooved barrel gave it an effective range up to four times that of a smoothbore, with similar improvements in accuracy," unquote. The article notes that unlike in a Revolutionary War, when soldiers were instructed not to fire until they saw the whites of their eyes, the Civil War was different. If aimed and handled competently, A Civil War rifled musket could hit its target at 400 yards or more. And this made close warfare and the use of a bayonet not as much necessary as in past wars. The article credits the use of the rifled musket as drastically transforming the roles of our cavalry and our field artillery. Quote, statistics appear to bear out this theory. Of all the wounds treated by the Union Army doctors throughout the war, nearly 95% were caused by small arms fire. Less than 1% were attributable to bayonets and swords, and all but a handful of the remainder resulted from artillery shells and shrapnel. And that's the end of that quote, and we're going to go to our third break, and my Melissa is going to change places with Glenn, and
so play a little,
yeah,
so
we're
going to
play
seats.
Musical control person.
There we go.
Okay.
And caller, I see you here. Please call back after the break.
Winter trails you never thought possible. Stand, float, walk on snow with better traction and stability than walking down the street. Modern snowshoes are the perfection of a thousand-year-old idea. They're lightweight and versatile, easy and fun to use for all ages. If you can walk, you can snowshoe. Get the exercise you crave. Let it snow. Go explore. Start today. No lift ticket required. But first, find the right style and the right fit at Frontier Outfitters. Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Hey, Fairbanks, it's still dark as a welder's elbow at night, and as the snow gets deeper, the moose start using the roads for trails. Moose lights save lives, and to help keep your family safe, Auto Trim Design is offering 15% off all Vision X LED moose lights when we professionally install them for you. So keep your family safe, save some bucks, and see us for your moose lights today at Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
As we always say, we will be here when the other guys are gone.
Weather brought to you by Vitus Energy. Vitus Energy can fill your heating fuel and propane tanks. Find Vitus Energy on Facebook for current pricing or see them online at vitus-energy.com.
KFAR weather.
Overcast today with daytime highs approaching 31. Westerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of snow tonight, lulls level off around 9 above. Overcast skies. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. Snow likely. Daytime highs approaching 23. A dusting of snow tomorrow. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, and Melissa's still here. We haven't done the change yet. Okay.
Still here.
KFAR Radio. So please call in at 458-8255, 458-TALK. And caller, if you...
Yep, he's here.
You're back. Okay, caller, you are on the line. Are you there?
Hello, greetings.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, the 50 BMG of today...
Yes.
It's been named in... anti-material rifle. It has an 800 grain load.
Oh gosh.
Max 800 grain bullet max, possibly 15,000 pounds of muzzle energy.
Okay.
And any rifle over 50 BMG, I think it's a NATO word or NATO description.
Uh-huh.
Anti-material rifle.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The point is that that has as much comparison to me as how destructive these mini ball was at the time.
Yeah.
So it would have been called anti-material, as don't shoot people with that.
Back in those days, yeah, if we had the same terminology.
Because of the surgeon's view of the 223, it's a kinder, gentler bullet.
Mm-hmm.
They can repair it, doesn't rip the whole arm off.
Yes.
If you got hit in a finger with one of those 700 grain, that probably rip your arm off.
Yeah, it was pretty devastating. I mean, I didn't know how much I should talk about it on the radio program, but some of the things I read, it was just a horrible war. And if I have time, I'll mention it later. It was actually considered, now we consider it the first modern war, because it was the first war fought after the Industrial Revolution in America. So we were able to mass produce the bullets and the firearms, or the firearms were mass produced, some of them in Europe. So, yeah, it's pretty devastating.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for adding that information. I appreciate it.
And you have another caller.
Okay, caller, another caller, you are on the line.
Oh, let me, there.
Oh, okay.
Radio.
You're on.
Hello, this is Ron.
Hi, Ron.
If we could back up just a bit to the introduction you had about red dots and sight pictures and optical gymnastics.
Yeah.
Something that I think new shooters to red dot might want to know about. We all try to square up that front sight with the rear sight when we're using irons.
Yes.
We want that perfect sight picture. And I did some experimenting after reading about it and using a laser cartridge and a laser receptor.
Mm-hmm.
As long as that dot is in the window and the dot is on the target,
yes,
the dot does not have to be centered in the window to score hits.
No, and did you have a chance to listen last week? Because that's Chuck mentioned that.
The part that is bothersome, at least to a new red dot shooter,
yeah,
seems that is that they want too perfect a sight picture.
Oh, sure. I went through that stage myself, lining everything up. It was driving me crazy.
and so if that helps people that are new, you have to be able to accept the movement of the dot as long as it's in the window.
Yes. No, you're right. And I think that's one of the main purposes of Chuck's class is basically transition people from how you and I learned with the iron sights. It was very awkward for me. I kept trying to line things up, and then I'd change my dot so that it lined up. And you know, then after a while, you kind of figure it out. But it would have been a lot quicker if I just took a class.
And you have to continuously fight that admonition, front sight press.
Yeah, well, we do, because that's the way we learn. But I'm wondering if people new to firearms that are just starting out with their first guns with red dots on them are not going to be doing that.
Well, I think that's an accurate observation. And I would also simply point out that the whole key to the red dot is presentation.
Oh, yes.
This hunting for the dot is, a terrible thing.
No, it is a terrible. Glenn and Melissa just changed, and Glenn's laughing. It is a terrible thing.
It's a terrible thing. Terrible thing.
I love that. We should use that often.
That should be a T-shirt.
Yeah. The front of the T-shirt, using hunting for your red dot on the back. It's a terrible thing.
It's a terrible thing.
Okay, you're going to get rich off
of
this, Ron.
Great bumper sticker as well. I think you're onto something.
You can monetize this.
The question being, do you make the circular motion with your arms or the hands, or do you do it with your head?
Yeah. I think I've told, our listeners a few times, that's what we do with the kids. My red dot's broken. Your red dot is there. You're just not bringing the dot, your gun up the same way consistently every time, right where you need to. And it takes... I would put little dots on the floor. Don't move your feet. You know, when they figured out what their personal position was, I would put dots on the floor and say, keep your feet right here, put your gun right here, lift it up the same way. And, it might take 100 times, but they get it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and another thing, too, your review of the book on the Civil War sniper was tremendous.
Oh, thank you.
The detail in which the writer used was just outrageous. It put me in mind of one of my favorite authors, a fellow by the name of Stephen Hunter.
Oh.
He was the author of the book Point of Impact, which was loosely the basis for the movie Shooter.
Okay.
So
I'm gonna. Yeah, I wrote that. Yeah.
Interested in some good sniper reads, although it be fiction. Hunter is definitely a place to go.
Okay, I've got that written down now. Stephen Hunter, Point of Impact for the movie Shooter. Okay, I learn more from all of you than I'll ever learn by myself. So
enjoy. He's a lot of fun.
Okay, no, I'll look that up. And I Jack Hinson book, I totally enjoyed that. It was one of those books where I picked it up to look through it. I'd heard about it. I picked it up to look through it, and about 4 or 5 hours later, I'm still reading it. you know it's a good book. And I hope others of our listeners buy that book or get it from the library, because I didn't get into any really of the backstories of the politics or the lifestyle in those days. It's just hugely interesting. We look at things through our eyes, but I think sometimes we need to go back and look at how things were back when.
The attitudes of the soldiers on both sides towards the civilian population was very revealing.
Yes, it was. Yes.
All right, you take care.
Well, thank you very much for all this information. I appreciate it. Thank you. And also thank the caller who called in about the 50 BMG. That was great information, too. So I'm going to finish up here. We're talking about what historians think about the Civil War. Some historians think that the rifled muskets over the smoothbores were not totally responsible for the carnage in the Civil War. And those historians agree that the troops had the right rifles and the mini bullets, but most did not have the training to be accurate with those rifled muskets. They couldn't take advantage of the accuracy at a distance. Also, many of the battles were fought at close quarters, and the speed of reloading would have helped with the mini balls, but not the distances and accuracy that those rifle muskets could achieve. So those wounds happened at close quarters and weren't taking advantage of what those rifles could do. They note that millions of rounds were fired at the enemy, but most went over their heads, and so fewer struck their targets. Quote, what these discussions tend to overlook, though, is that it was not just the accuracy or frequency of fire that killed and maimed so many men, but the circumstances, but the characteristics of the ammunition that encountered flesh and bone. While a smoothbore musket could expel a solid ball with a greater muzzle velocity than a rifle musket, it was the projectile that the latter weapon fired, the slightly smaller mini ball, that made all the difference, unquote. And the article further notes, quote, the intent of the designers of the rifle musket and mini ball combination was to increase the firepower of the individual soldier, and in this quest they succeeded. But in developing a defender's dream, they also created a nightmare, not just for the men felled by the bullet, but for the medical corps stewards and surgeons who had to deal with its effects, unquote. And as I said before, solid balls could pass right through the body nearly intact. The mini balls on impact flattened and deformed. They created a shock wave that emanated outward. The exit wound was bad. Quote, the mini ball didn't just break bones, it shattered them. It didn't just pierce tissue and internal organs, it shredded them. And if the ragged tumbling bullet had enough force to cleave completely through the body, which it often did, it tore out an exit wound several times the size of the entrance wound. Civil War surgeons were quickly overwhelmed by the gaping wounds, mangled bodies, and mutilated limbs they were asked to repair. Though often accused of being too partial to their bone saws, amputating arms and legs as quickly as the men could be placed on their operating tables and subdued with chloroform or ether, the surgeons really had no choice. Even if they had skills and resources to attempt the reconstructive surgery in the heat of the battle, they didn't have the time, unquote. In this article, The Bullet That Changed History, the author starts out with a few paragraphs about a Private William Fletcher who was hit with a mini ball through the stomach during the Second Battle of Bull Run. And after Private Fletcher came to and realized with a stomach wound from the mini ball he was going to die a slow, agonizing death, he sat up hoping for a kill shot. And Private William Fletcher survived. He had made what's called a Kentucky button, which was a plug of dried oak he whittled to hold up his pants. Quote, the mini ball that knocked him down fractured the button, dissipating enough of the bullet's force to prevent it from penetrating too deeply. Fletcher recovered and went on to fight at the battles of Fredericksburg, Gettysburg, and Chickamauga, where he was wounded, this time in the foot, unquote. His foot was saved from amputation by the care received by the sisters from the Sisters of Charity. He survived both wounds, and he became a successful businessman in Beaumont, Texas. And he showed his gratitude by donating land and building materials to build the Sisters of Charity, a hospital in Beaumont. Quote, his memoir of the Civil War, Rebel Private, Front and Rear, was said by author Margaret Mitchell to be her single most valuable research tool when writing Gone with the Wind. So what do you think I did? I ordered William Fletcher's book, Rebel, Front and Private, Front and Rear, and maybe that will be a future Shooter's Corner book review. And Glenn's about to take us to our hour break. Thank you for listening, folks. And I've got some really neat things to talk about next week.
KFAR Radio, brought to you by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or past episodes of Shooter's Corner, go to KFARradio.com and click on the archives page. For more Shooter's Corner on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.